Escaladores combines two words when translating from Spanish to English: climbers and scalers. Climbers, because they climb mountains of difficulties and prejudices and mountain ranges of impossibilities. And scalers, because they manage to scale their initial idea.
La empresa que acaba de reemplazar a Yahoo en el Nasdaq 100 es also Argentina. Vale más que la mayor. Se llama Mercado Libre.
MercadoLibre.com, un sitio de internet.
An idea is always important, but much more important is to put it into practice and make it grow, even in contexts that seem adverse.
Mercado Libre, a giant.
Climbers and Scalers is the story of people who think they can. Reaching the summit is not only touching the top, but also enjoying competing in the most challenging league with the best in the world. This is the story of Mercado Libre, told in first person by its protagonists. This is Climbers and Scalers, narrated by their own professional AI cloned voices, with full authorizations.
Mercado Libre, congratulations.
Nico Berman is the eighth person to join Mercado Libre, where he became the leader responsible for marketing. Today, Nico is a partner of Hernán Casá and Nico Secassi in Casec Ventures. Nico did not meet Marcos or Hernán at Stanford. Nico met his partners at Mercado Libre selling things. Where? At Mercado Libre. But let Nico himself tell you his story.
I was born in Buenos Aires, Argentina, in 1975. I was lucky that my parents were in a very good economic position during my first years of life, so I was able to have a very good education, bilingual education, English every day, and from a very entrepreneurial family. My grandfather arrived in Argentina with a piece of paper that said what his name was, and with that he started to build his family in the country. The truth is that with the energy of an entrepreneur, he set up a company that is still standing today, Radio Victoria, which manufactures household appliances and TV sets, and it is a company that the family continued. My father ended up branching out. He ended up working in international business, teaching, and a little bit with that entrepreneurial DNA of the family in general. When I was 13 years old, I started to look into the business world, how to generate my own capital. But more than anything, I was always attracted to it. It amused me, and I started at 13 selling clothes. At 14, I was selling computers and computer parts. At 16, I had the chance to join an American life insurance company, and I was selling life insurance to my friends' parents at school. I've been through absolutely everything. In high school, I think that thing you tell me I probably tried to sell, I tried to generate business, and already after the experience I had in Ort as a high school following media, I always really liked the creative part, so I could live it in those years of high school with the specialization that Ort brings. From there, I decided to get into the business world, into the corporate world. So I started my career in business administration. Behind the scenes, I started it at Ditela. And those years, maybe a little bit before my 16, 17, my father started to do very badly economically, almost to the point of bankruptcy. So I went from the golden cradle to, after my parents' divorce, living with my mom and contributing at home with money to pay the utility bills and pay some other home expenses. So with 16, 17, and 18 years old, I contributed at home and went to study. And at the same time, I was working because I needed to bring some money home if we wanted to maintain our ways of living, which of course had been adjusted versus my early years as a child. By the time I was a teenager, it had adjusted. We wanted to try to keep some things going and we had to work, so I started working in one of the companies in the family group, the only one in which there was no family member. So I was sent to work with no privileges at what was at that time LG Electronics. The truth is that I learned a lot and it was a spectacular experience. So during the first 2 years, don't ask me how I was able to accommodate the schedules. I started as soon as the university opened, and I left at 3 in the afternoon, and from 4 to 10 at night, I worked at Sontech. That was the name of the company, which I could sustain for a while until it became evident that I would not be able to maintain a high performance in the places. So I decided that I had the need to continue working, and I therefore switched to go to the state university.
Beyond his undoubted spirit of self-improvement and desire to grow, what has been driving him since he was a child is selling. And in the meantime, Between working in a family business and his studies, luck was going to put him in front of a poster that would catch his attention.
My life was studying. I was going to work at Sontec, and Sontec was a traditional company, a company that is dedicated to produce appliances and sell. They are companies that usually grow 5-10% year by year if things are going very well. And the truth is that the company was doing very well, but that was the growth rate. And somehow, when you're in companies that grow at that rate, somehow the teams also tend to grow at a similar rate. And why? Because the business, a year from now, will probably be very similar to the business today. So, the way you do things today may still be very similar to the way you do things a year from now. You are not forced to make big changes, big disruptions. Of course, you try, but there is also a structure. The growth plans are already in place, and you are not as flexible as to be able to accelerate even more changes in this type of organization. What happened to me is that one day I was going to the office, I was on the bus, and I saw through the window a sign on the street that said, Palm Pilot for $1, and underneath, something that said, Mercado Libre. When I saw that, wow, it was very similar to something that I was already very excited about, which was eBay. Since I was a little kid, I was always a geek, and all the little computer games, the BBS, connecting by modem with a friend and talking, simulating with a processor, one of these voice synthesizers, simulating making phone calls to random numbers, simulating that I was a computer calling from NASA, and I was doing a voice test, and people talking to me and falling for that. I was always a bit of a computer geek, and I was lucky to have early internet. So that DNA of mine, since I was a little boy, was to try to generate a business, to sell, to buy, and build some structure. And suddenly I had a route, I had a place where I could do my business at night at home quietly after work and study. So that day, I got to the office and I looked around. Well, let's see what are the used things. Usually brands have returns, and I went to see what we had. And I started to publish. And my job there at Sontec had started as the person who went to the supermarkets to look for all the returns. And then, after a few years, I started to manage the accounts, and then a little bit more years, I handled the commercial relations with the big chains and supermarkets. Among them, Walmart and Carrefour. So, of course, every time I went to meet with the people from Sam's Club, which was this wholesaler that Walmart had in the country, I went with a digital camera, the Mavica, I think it was called, and I took some pictures. I took pictures of some very nice imported t-shirts. I took pictures of a TV of another brand. I think it was a CD player, or I think it was a DVD player, I don't even remember. And among other products, there was one which got to be marked in my history because I published everything I found, which were some very large packs of all tastes, colors, flavors of condoms, of a very well-known brand in the market. Of course, I came home those days and published absolutely everything. I published LG TV sets, I published washing machines, and I also published a set of condoms. And the truth is that it started to sell. Products started to be sold. Since I was in this world, I liked the tech theme. And when someone won, they were auctions at that time. When someone won the auction, I sent him an email that I don't know how I did it. But when the other person opened it, it played music and I celebrated, you won the bid, you won the bid. Then I started to send emails saying you won the Prime condom boxes, you won the auction of the TV with music. And it seems that I started to sell a little bit more than expected in those days. My email with the music reached the team at Mercado Libre. So they called me one day. They sent me a message. We see that you are selling. We want to meet you. Basically, it was to make a focus group. At that time, we were two crazy cats selling. So, well, let's bring one of the two cats. We arranged to meet. For me, Mercado Libre was a monster in my head, with posters everywhere. It was an honor to be able to go see them. And we arranged to meet a few days later at noon.
Again, the billboards, the advertising that sold to that giant that was Mercado Libre. But when it came to knowing what was behind those posters, Nico was going to find quite a different reality to what he had imagined.
So, that day I dressed as usual. It was very men in black. My life at that time was a suit, all dressed up. It was a big role. Because it was also a big deal because in my geeky part, I had the Palm Pilot hanging from some little pins. So I would arrive with my jacket all in black and my shirt and a palm hanging there. And I said, well, I'm on my way. I arrived at the building where I was told to go. the Panamericana Plaza, an incredible building there in Buenos Aires. And of course, I expected nothing less. I go into the reception of the building, I say, "Hello, good morning, I come to Mercado Libre." And I see that the person at the reception desk is looking at me with an exorbitant look. What is he talking about? "Mercado Libre, you say?" "Yes, yes, I am coming to Mercado Libre." "But there is no Mercado Libre here." "But why not? They told me it was here. This is the Panamericana Plaza, right?" "Yes, yes, but there is no Mercado Libre here. Are you sure?" "Marcos Galperin, Hernán Casá, Juan Martín de la Serna." "Let's see," he told me. "Give me a second." The gentleman walks away, makes a phone call, comes back and tells me, "You know what, it's here, but you have to enter through the garages." Of course, I said, my face was, "What do you mean? Through the garages? What are you talking about?" But well, we entered through the garages. So, from what I was coming from, the great Panamericana Plaza, the Mercado Libre everywhere, they had already lowered me one level, they were already putting me through the parking lots. So, I went down. I had to wait because there were some moto boys there delivering some packages, and after those packages, it was my turn. "How are you doing? I come to Mercado Libre." "Ah, yes, yes, Mercado Libre. Your name?" "Nico Berman." "That's right. Your ID?" "Right, very good. Do you know how to get there?" "No." And with my face, I said, "Why are you asking me?" "It's as if it's a bit difficult to get there," he says. He opens the door. We're by the garages. Garage 102. 103. Car here. Car there. We keep walking until we get there. I look at the floor, at a place where it says Garage 12 and Garage 13. I look up. Prefabricated walls. Where the car should be, there was a metal door. And he says to me, "Welcome to Mercado Libre." Moment in which I took a deep breath and said, "What do I do?" I open the door, or I get the hell out of here. Because it was, what am I getting myself into?
So the giant, the monster, it was just an office with prefabricated walls in garages 12 and 13 of a parking lot. Anybody could have turned around and gone to the tranquility of a job, a company, and a family. But Nico decided to knock on the door and enter. Who was he going to meet?
I open the door and I'll never forget the feeling of, wow, what is this? And the surprise of the people that were in there going, wow, who is this? Who walked in? With men in black, with the palm hanging on his neck. For me, it was a place. It was bizarre because I came back from Mercado Libre, with signs everywhere. To suddenly, not the building, but the garage. It was two garages with tables against the wall. Almost like kids playing PlayStation. Because they were all in their early 20s. Four or five people, no more than that. With obviously the shocked face, looking at me. A table in the middle, which was where we would turn around, looking against the wall, working. And we would turn the chair and we had the little room there, the meeting table. It was a unique moment. It was a moment when millions of things went through my head until someone said, "Are you Nicolás?" And that's when it all started.
So, in a windowless office, with five or six 20-somethings boys who looked like they were playing PlayStation, Nico made his first impression at Mercado Libre. And it must have been a good one because they took him to the most important meeting room of the company to interview him.
From there, we went to the bar. There is a bar inside the building, which we used for many years as a meeting room. It was very funny because later on, the CEO of such and such would come to see us. And of course, we were not going to put them in the garages, so we would take them to the dining room of the building. And for many years, that was our meeting room. The conversation there, in a nutshell, was, "What do you think about Mercado Libre?" So I told them what I thought. I told them what I would do. There was Juan Martín de la Serna with... Wait, I don't remember if Juan was there. No, Juan Martín was not there. But El Pulpo was there. Marcelo was there. I will never take him out of my mind. When the company starts, Marcos Hernán asked themselves, who do we bring in technology? Marcos's cousin knew something about technology, so he was the father of the technological creature. And Marcelo was the one who interviewed me. Actually, it was to see, at least that's what he told me, to see what I thought of Meli, the site, and we started talking, and I told him everything I would do, how I would improve the platform, from the point of view of the client, the seller, the buyer. And at one point he told me, why don't you dedicate yourself to this full time? Why don't you quit your job and focus 100% on buying and selling products? There is a huge opportunity here. And the truth is that my reaction was immediate. I think there is an opportunity here, an incredible business to do, and also super easy. I can be lying at home, people going to look for the products. I publish them, when it sells, they go, they deliver it, super easy, and I'm sure I would earn a lot of money. But what happens to me is that I don't feel that I would learn so much. And today I want to learn. I want to grow and learn. That's what I enjoy. And from growth will come the rest of the things. Then very quickly, Marcelo said to me, well, what would happen if you were working with us? It made me think.
Everything in Mercado Libre seems to say that it doesn't matter where you come from, but where you want to go. And it's something that sounds powerful and challenging today. But when Mercado Libre was just a little room in a parking lot, more than a slogan, it felt like an act of faith. It took a lot of faith or some clairvoyance to get on, or down, because it was in the basement.
And from that conversation that we had, from seeing what they were doing, the truth is that clearly my brain was, I could learn a lot here, because there is so much to do and the industry is starting up and the potential that I saw at that time in technology was gigantic. I would love it. And I told him, the truth is, I probably would. That could maybe work because there's so much to do, so much to learn. It could be interesting. And very quickly, Marcelo automatically tells me and asks me, well, how much would you like to earn? And what I told him was, look, today, the truth is that I have a very good position and I earn very well. If 100 is what I earn, I would say that 30 is my standard of living, and the rest is all savings. I would be willing to give up all my savings as long as I can maintain my standard of living. To add to it, as would anyone who wants to invest in education, I would invest all that part of my savings, 70% of my income, to be able to learn. The next question was, when can you start?
Sometimes we have no choice but to trust our instinct. And Nico, it didn't take 10 years to prove that he wasn't wrong. Every year that went by was a confirmation.